It's such a treat to speak with Bruce Lipton today. We've been speaking over the years, even before his internationally renowned and translated book, Biology of Belief, was published. This was when epigenetics came out of the closet, so to speak, and here we are about 20 years later as his book, Beyond Darwin, is going to set the scientific method even closer to perhaps a greater truth. I'm Robin with Tributaries. Join us, won't you? I've got lots of questions, and I'm also ready to flow in the moment.
I hope you are, because sometimes you throw me a question, and I take it to the moon and back. And so you have to, at some point, be assertive enough. Bruce, or something, stop me.
I will do that. Bruce, I want to thank you for writing the book Beyond Darwin and for championing the need for science to keep evolving. I quote from your book right now, "Our true source identity is the expression of a personalized and immortal energy field, aka spirit." So,
yes.
You're going beyond and you're interested in the evolution of all. Important for science in particular. I'm tired of it being this stagnant, it's God, it was written kind of a thing.
No, we're manifestors. We're making it. Some of us don't like what we're making.
And some of us don't like what others are making, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Which restricts me from going off script and start talking about things like politics.
No. Let's not do that. Let's keep to a beautiful script about expansion and consciousness. I heard this little brief interview this morning about Howard Zinn and how he said there's a lot in life that is surprising and we can be that surprise.
When we get out of being victim and start becoming masters, the surprise will manifest.
Yes. And to reference how many years we've talked on and off, I was looking up when the Biology of Belief was published, which was in 2005. And I had a good laugh when I saw that the publisher was Mountain of Love Publishing. So it wasn't quite ready for the Penguin Random House publishing companies yet. It was too far out for them.
It was fun for us because Margaret, my partner.
Yes, of course.
He's also my publisher. And we were working at first with New York publishers. And they said, "Look, Bruce, you're talking against genes. You're talking against Darwin. Pick one." What do you mean, pick one? Okay? At some point, it just never worked out. And Margaret thought, after all the editorial advice from the big corp, she said, "It's too important to leave it to them."
Yes.
And she got instructions on how to publish a book and how to get it distributed. And then she said, "I'll do it." And it was success from the beginning.
Beyond, I'm sure, your wildest dreams, right? Maybe not beyond your wildest dreams.
It's not beyond your dream. I'm surprised of the manifestation of that. It actually happens, you know. So global. It's a global book at this point, you know.
Of course, yes.
And I love it because in South America, in Buenos Aires, the medical school has made a medical school course on biology of belief. So medical students are learning that. That is beyond what I expected and most wonderful, because that's where the training needs to go, and stop training physicians that we're all victims. The whole drug industry is like, oh my God.
Yes, yes. Well, speaking of politics, we don't need to go into that subject, especially because this audience with Tributaries, they're very broad and wide, and they certainly know a whole lot about that story. So Beyond Darwin, which was published 20 years after The Biology of Belief, so many directions and connections getting away from survival of the fittest, which to me feels so silly to even think that way. So thank you. And I also ask, why did things get stuck there for so long, do you think?
Well, a culture, a civilization is based on a set of beliefs that are representing the population. When Darwin came in, the civilization was controlled by the church, okay, which took power out of the people and gave it to the church. I always love it because in those days, if you needed a question to be answered, you'd seek out the guy wearing the black outfit. And then science comes in, and they're wearing the white outfit. I love that. Okay, now we got
we need the rainbow outfit, I think.
And so basically, when Darwin came in, it made sense to people. The church's thing was based on, can you believe it? Let me tell you a story. Can you believe it? But Darwin's stuff becomes physically manifest. I mean, the simple point is this. Two dogs mate. They have a litter of puppies. One of them is the runt of the litter. It's totally different than the rest. And when you have someone like Darwin saying, yes, that was a change in the heredity, taking it toward another species, everybody, oh, yeah, that I can see it. Yeah. And so it had more feet on the ground than the previous civilization. And then the research started to say, well, let's support this. And then it was based on heredity, which Darwin didn't know what heredity was. They talked about gemmules. I said, well, that was a philosophical idea that each part of the body has a structure like an organizing center called a gemmule, and that the gemmules give the quality to the machine. Hmm. Well, that was long before genes were discovered, of course, and searching for gemmules led to the gene story. And then the whole thing got twisted with Francis Crick. Remember, we talked about Watson and Crick as the founders of DNA, although they didn't do that. It was the woman who did that, okay?
Right.
And the idea is Francis Crick, 3 years after announcing the DNA double helix in 1953, in 1958, Crick comes out with a publication, and this is his title, The Central Dogma of Biology. It is in that paper that he says information only flows in one direction. It starts with the genes, it's translated into like a Xerox copy called RNA. DNA goes to RNA, and the RNA is a blueprint to make a protein, which is the body. Okay? According to Crick, the information only flows in one direction. So I said, well, if I'm the body, the protein, can I alter my genes? The answer is, oh, absolutely not. The information goes down. It doesn't go up, which led to a belief by science. And now remember, we're buying science over the church. In today's world, if you're sick, you're more likely to go see the guy in the white coat than to go deal with the guy in the black coat. So when science bought the story from Crick, and now I have to emphasize, it's really beautiful. I said, what? It was a hypothesis. There was no research on it. It was just, hey, that's a suggestion. And everybody went, sounds good to me. And there was never any research on that concept. And it was repeated over and over again. Then it was in the textbooks. And that was 1960, 1970, 1980, 90, 2000. Now it's still in the book. It's called genetic determinism, which means genes determine the character of your life and you have no control.
Well, that's what happens now as religion had its story and everyone said, okay, that's a story, I can live with that. And now science has their story. I mean, you are certainly a purely bred scientist who...
Yes.
Yes, and it's been a huge part of your life this whole time. Now, in my life, I could not embrace science until after high school. Not a great enthusiast for science. So excuse me when I say here that I think it's all a theory. Theories evolve. I think a place we can move from here, you left the genes and all of that.
Yes.
And talk about environment. That's the big thing, right? Let's talk about environment. So now, here we are, 20 years plus beyond the biology of a belief. Every time an electron microscope evolves, we get a new picture. So do we need to define environment? What is environment? We can't necessarily see or feel or touch or hear everything, and yet there are factors within those realms that are affecting us.
Well, environment is everything we talk about, first of all, as outside of the body. I'm in an environment. There's a big issue here, and I say, what? When we have environments, there are actually two environments, the one on the outside of the body and the environment on the inside of the body. And they're not directly connected. A change in the outer environment does not necessarily make a change on the inner environment. The inner environment is controlled by the brain, which controls the chemistry of the body. And I say, so the chemistry of my internal environment is a separate entity than outside, okay? Now, that given, then here's a very important point. The proteins that make up the human body give us structure. I go, yes, they do. But proteins are complex molecules. They're like a long string when they're produced, but they self-knit into a three-dimensional structure. So a protein is basically a string of amino acids. But once it's synthesized, they knit up based on the negative and positive charges balancing each other. Mm-hmm. So that gives the protein a shape. We call it conformation. Each protein has a unique shape based on the string of amino acids that represent what we call the backbone. Okay? So I say, so what? Yeah, proteins give us a structure. But what is the shape based on? The balancing of positive and negative charges of the amino acids that are like beads making the peptide string, okay? So the positive ones and negative ones, and when you synthesize making the string, the positive and negative charges interact in such a way that opposite charges attract, like charges repel, and it spontaneously wraps itself into a three-dimensional conformation. It's like knitting. Nature's knitting. Yeah. Instead of putting a program in with needles, the program of the final shape is built into the amino acid sequence, which will determine the final 3D shape. And it's based on charges, okay?
Right.
Now comes something interesting. I say, what? What if an environmental signal, which has a charge, binds to the protein? Well, it will change the charge on the protein. Go, yeah. And I say, yeah, but what does that mean? The shape of the protein is based on the charge. So if a signal binds to a protein, changes the charge, the protein changes shape to accommodate the new charge. And all of a sudden, I just told it to you, but I'll now emphasize it. That is the secret of life. What do you mean? It's movement that characterizes life. I said, yeah, but where does this movement come from? Proteins changing shape. I said, yeah, but what motivates them? Environmental signals, okay? So here's an interesting fact. You're alive right now, you're moving, why? The signals are coming in, you're adjusting your proteins, which include the muscle, which is contracting, blah, 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 and I'm moving, okay? And then I die. I say, then what happened? I say, I'm not moving anymore. I say, are the proteins still there? I go, yeah, the body is shaped by the proteins, but they're not moving. I go, what's missing? The signal. When you're alive, the information signals go to the proteins and adjust their shape with their movement. But when you're dead, the signals are no longer being sent throughout the body. And as a result, the proteins don't change shape, and now you're called a cadaver. You are dead. So I say, then where did life come from? Well, two things. The proteins are the physical mechanical piece, but the environmental signals are the activator of the proteins, okay? And proteins and environmental signals have a lock-key relationship. Certain signals affect certain proteins, other signals affect other proteins, so a protein is specifying a signal, okay? So basically it says this, a human body is a protein machine, and with a nervous system, we can translate environmental signals into brain signals, which in turn make chemistry. The brain releases chemistry into the blood. The chemistry are signals, hormones, emotional chemicals, growth factors. The signals in the blood are carried to the cells, and those signals from the cell's environment control the behavior and the genetics of the cell. So all of a sudden I say, well then, the old story that people have been programmed with and still pushed on the media is a false story. Oh, your genes control this. I go, first of all, genes are blueprint to make a protein. Blueprints don't control themselves. They're information.
Right, they're a picture.
Right. So who uses a blueprint? An architect reads the blueprint and can adjust it. And I go, and so, who's the architect?
I have to say right now, the way you looked when you just said that, it was like, the hand went under the chin, and it was just, yes, it was very cute.
The mind is the architect. And I said, what's the mind doing? The mind is reading the environment and then adjusting the interior to complement that environment.
Yes.
If it's too hot out, the mind reads that environment and then adjusts the temperature of the body to cool it off, sweating, okay? Mm-hmm. Or just the opposite, too cold out, and the brain reads too cold, sends chemistry to the body to do what? Raise the metabolism to make it warmer. So we're adjusting to that environment. Okay?
Right. So science, would you say, the people that are working now doing research, what are they finding zeroing in on this frequency, on this charge? Because there's a whole new world in there that was never looked at before too many years ago, right?
Absolutely. I really want to clear this up because a lot of people are skeptical of science. They're saying, oh, science is destroying things, these drugs and blah, blah, blah. Let me say a very important thing. Science does not make a product. If somebody is doing research to make a product, that's technology. That's not science.
I love
science
that.
Produces ideas and philosophy that technology employs mechanically to do something. Mm. The failure is not science. The failure is technology.
Right.
Building things to make money that have side effects that can kill us. You know, it's things like that.
That's a very important thing to separate out. Thank you for saying that.
Oh, to me it
that.
Is. As a scientist,
yes.
I feel like, don't contaminate me with the pharmaceutical company. I'm not pharmaceutical company.
Right.
And the science changes at times.
Oh.
And the big change that introduces the world we are in is the change in physics. I go, physics, yes. Physics, by definition, is the science of mechanisms. You want to understand how something works, the mechanism is the subject of the physics, okay? The physics that almost all of us grew up with is Newtonian physics. What is that? It's a science based on the belief of two realms in the universe, a physical material realm and an invisible energy realm, two realms. But the science in that Newtonian philosophy is physical things affect the material realm, but they don't affect the energy realm. Energy things affect the energy realm, but they don't affect the material realm. So when science says a body is a material object, which it started with, okay, Then it says the only thing that can influence the body has got to be something physical, chemicals.
It's a very industrial and mental thought process.
Well, it's become more industrial because it says if your body's not working right, it's the chemistry. And all of a sudden, then I say we have an industry called the pharmaceutical company. And they say if your body's not working right, it's a physical machine, the only way you can adjust it is with physical chemicals.
Right. But also what I meant more was it's about separating. And any time you start separating, then it's a rabbit hole and it loses that whole aspect which is needed when looking at anything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is where quantum physics come in. It said the belief of separation, matter, and energy is an illusion.
Right.
Everything is energy. What do you mean? Physical things aren't invisible things? I go, no. Physical things are made out of atoms. Okay. The version with the nucleus with protons and neutrons and electrons spinning around like satellites. Oh, those are small particles. Small pieces of matter. I go, yeah. But by the time quantum physics came, 1927, they looked at the smallest bits of that atom, smaller than protons and neutrons, and they found that the smallest bit of an atom is an energy vortex. Think of a nano tornado of energy. That's the foundation of an atom, an invisible energy vortex. Atoms are made out of invisible energy vortices. I say, so what? An atom is an energy field. I go, yeah. Ah, you know, there's two kinds of fields. Energy can be like waves on the ocean, ripples and ripples going up and down, waves. But energy can spin like a tornado.
Right.
So there's a wave form and a spin form. The spin form gives rise to what we perceive as matter, okay? It's just a different form of energy, okay? And the significance about that, the body and everything in your world that you see made out of matter is actually invisible. I go, oh, come on. You know, it's like, what do you mean it's invisible? I can see you. I go, and it's not a joke, but when I say it, everybody giggles.
Of course, yes.
The only way you can see me as if the lights are on.
You are so brilliant, Bruce. Oh, my goodness.
And what people don't recognize is this. A light is photons, particles of light. And when they hit an energy field, they're reflected back. So when the lights are on, I'm an invisible body. But when the lights are on, the photons hit me, and then are reflected back. You don't see me. You see a veneer of photons on my surface. I go, what does the body really look like? I go, well, we have a scan system, CAT scan, MRI scan, PET scan. These are made by physicists. I go, so what? I say, the scan devices only read energy. They don't read light at all. I go, so what? If you see a CAT scan of a body, guess what? You can see the bones, the muscles, the organs. I go, yeah, but the scan doesn't see physical things. It only sees energy. I go, aha! The body is the invisible energy that the scans reveal.
Right.
But when the lights are on, the invisible energy becomes manifest as physical because the light has hit the surface and then you see reflection. So everything is made out of energy.
Right.
I go, so why is that important? Well, the energy is in ripples, okay? Now think about this. It's raining, and the rain is falling on the pond. And everywhere a raindrop hits, it's energy, the falling energy called kinetic energy, is transferred to the water. And I go, yeah, but that's when you see the ripples. I go, well, that's the water being physically shaped by the invisible energy. So the energy is the shape of the ripple. The water ripple is not the energy. The water ripple is the force making the water into a ripple. The force is invisible. Okay, right. So what? So it's raining, and the raindrops are hitting the pond. Is there a place on the pond where there are ripples not connected to any other ripples? All the ripples are converging on each other all the time.
Right.
I say, why is that important? The answer is this. Everything made out of energy is connected to everything else made out of energy.
Yes.
There's no energy ripple that is not connected to another ripple. I say, why is that? We, as energy, are connected to everything in the universe.
Well, that's it. As consciousness is expanding, it totally has to do with collective participation. And
yes.
And you write about the blueprint that we've been talking about, but for you, igniting change, a blueprint for igniting change, as you write
yes.
in your book. Talk a little bit about that. When I was thinking about this, I thought chaos is leading that expansion. So it's almost like chaos is a brilliant blueprint in itself, in a sense.
Ah, I love that you brought that up. You know why? Because conventional belief is chaos is random stuff happening. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Chaos is actually deterministic. There's so much interaction going on, you can't put all of the data together. Let me tell you something. Weather is chaotic. I go, what do you mean? Well, it could rain today. It could not rain today. I say, but if you could understand all of the actions of the environment, and let's go back, the story of a butterfly wing flapping
right.
and changing the weather, that's because the butterfly is changing the field, which can change the weather, okay? Well, guess what? The whole idea is how many of the butterflies do you have to count to see if it's going to rain today? And I just, you can't count all the butterflies or anything else altering the environment.
Right. So rabbit hole.
Yes. We guess the weather based on probability.
Yeah.
But if you could read all of the contributing factors to weather, I can tell you exactly right now, outside your window, at this moment in time, I can tell you the exact temperature, what's going on. Why? It's not random.
Right.
It's just too Nature. Much information
yes,
that I
yes,
can't get
yes,
it off.
Yes.
So chaos, take away the concept of random. Chaos says there's something going on here, there's something you can't see, because it takes too much information that we can't all put in our head.
Right, and this also fits in to medicine, because all of this is not unlike a cancerous tumor being an evolutionary innovation to accommodate short-term stress in the body.
Okay, first of all, there's no gene that causes cancer.
Well, yeah, no, we don't even need to go there. We're with you 100%.
What we need to know is that cancer is a result of lifestyle and consciousness. I go, so where's the connection? Then I go back. Let me give you a quote. And this quote, fundamental, from Albert Einstein. The quote is, the field, which means the energy in which we are living, the field is the sole governing agency of matter. That energy, invisible energy, is shaping matter. I guess so why is that important? Your brain is broadcasting energy fields, and your thought fields are the invisible forces that are shaping your material existence. All of a sudden I say, your thoughts as broadcasting energy fields is manifesting your life experiences in the material world.
Yes.
And I say, if you change your thought, you change the material expression of your life.
Yes, and I think equal to Einstein, let me throw a quote out to you from Rumi. We've all heard the beginning, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. But the next two lines, when the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense.
Nope, that's chaos, because if you have to put all of it together and realize you can't do that, so you're living in what... I wonder what's going to happen. I said, you don't have to wonder, it's already programmed.
And I want to bring up right now, Bruce, that your life has been so marvelous, meaning what incredible marveling you have done and you have looked at and focused on. And just one more question about science, since I'm basically allergic to science.
I love science.
You are loving science. Why does the magical membrane fascinate you so much? Why is it a favorite topic?
Because years ago, while I was teaching medical students genetic determinism, that's the genes you have control the character of your life, I was working with stem cells, which are, by definition, embryonic cells. I was cloning them. That means I just put one stem cell in a dish by itself. It divides every 10 hours. So first there's one, then there's 2, 4, 8, 16, doubling. At the end of a week, 30,000 cells in the petri dish. But the point is, they all came from one parent. So all 30,000 are genetically identical cells, okay? I split them into three petri dishes, 10,000 each. All dishes, collectively, same genetics. But I changed the chemistry of their environment. And the environment is called culture medium. I said, what is it? It's very profoundly important. It's the laboratory version of blood. I go, why? I said, if I'm growing an animal cell, its natural environment is the blood that in which it lives. So if I'm making kosher medium, I look at the chemistry of blood and then try to synthesize it in the lab as medium. But in doing that, I can change some of the chemistry slightly. I made three versions of kosher medium, the environment. Remember, I'm going to put that in the petri dish. The cells are living in the kosher medium. I make three versions. So I have three dishes, genetically identical cells. In dish one, environment A, the cells form muscle. In dish two, genetically identical cells, but a slight chemical difference in the environment, the cells form bone. In dish three, again, genetically identical cells, a slight change in the environment, and they form fat cells. And while I'm teaching people in the classroom, medical students, genes control life, my research says, wait a minute, they all have the same genes. How come muscle, bone, fat? I said, it wasn't the genes, it was the environment.
So let me ask you quickly about the environment. Were you surprised, or were you going for, like with the one environment, were you going after creating bone stem cell, or were you going?
The first thing was a surprise because I was growing stem cells that had a very particular fate, they were forming muscle. But occasionally my cultures, a different version of the cells derived from the muscle stem cell, started showing up. They were bone making cells. I think, how'd that happen? I'm surprised. So my research started focusing on the strange-looking cells that came from what were original myoblasts. And then I found they were called fibroblasts or adipocyte, that's a lipid cell. And my research was, well, wait a minute, these are controllable experiments, which means it's not random, that something is going on that is predictable. And of course, the question is, well, yes, it's predictable. My colleagues would see my research, but they denied it because they were teaching genes control life, and my research challenged the fundamental belief. They wrote me off.
Right.
They said, oh, that's an artifact of your experiment, but they left me with this. Well, if it's true, how does the environment affect the cell? I didn't know. But I left the university. And I want you to know, I had tenure at the medical school, University of Wisconsin. That means a job for life.
Right.
And I left. Why? Because I knew I could not go in the classroom and teach medical students something I no longer believed in. I didn't believe in genetic determinism.
Yeah, right there, that answers your question. Who am I to question Darwin, the great Darwin? You know, it just made me wonder, the world really buying into Darwin's whole thought process. Maybe
it's propagated by the teachers that you believe.
Right. Of course. Of course. Yes. I concur. And I'm so happy you do go beyond Darwin.
Well, because Darwin gave us limitations. And the limitations are you're the expression of your heredity. Well, that means I didn't pick the damn genes. I can't change them. They turn on and off by themselves. I have no control. I am powerless. That was the belief. And that belief that says, well, if you're sick, who's going to fix it? Well, the first thing is, I am powerless.
Right.
And I say, well, who's going to fix it? The doctor. Okay. And I say, what happened? You took your belief system, you disavowed any power, and said that I am a victim and that they will fix me. And you bought it. That's the belief system. Everybody, yeah, you have no control. Mm-hmm. And then we gave up power. We already had the power to heal ourselves, but
yes. We
didn't believe it. And if you don't believe it, you can't use it.
Exactly, Well, Bruce, let me ask you this. Quantum science deals with the mind and spirituality.
Yes.
What are you seeing for change? Evolution happens. Scientific evolution happens. The mind, I'm not so excited about because it's very myopic. It's always got to be myopic because it can't see the whole picture. Do you see a science beyond quantum? What's next?
I think the quantum is the unfolding of a new science. It's 100 years old, but it's called the new physics.
Right.
Because Newtonian physics is everybody's belief system. Yep, there's a material world, there's an energy world, there's separate entities, and you built a life around that belief. And then a new science, 100 years old, comes in and says, that is an illusion. There's only one thing, energy. And all of a sudden, it said, well, then you have to think differently. Because now when you look at matter, you can't look at it and say, that's a separate realm from the universe. That's energy.
Yeah. You know what I just loved when you said that, when they come together, I put my hands together. And that's what people do when they pray. And to me, prayer is silence. It's that listening. And that's where all the great ideas come from, really.
Right. And ideas, or where are the ideas coming from?
Yeah.
And the answer is this, where are we coming from? What does that mean? I said, where do we come from? How come I am Bruce and you are not? And the answer is this, from a biological point of view, and I taught immunology for years, let me assure you something. The immune system sees physical things, viruses, bacteria, parasites, etc. If I put an organ from somebody else's body into yours, you transplant a kidney, a lung, a heart, your immune system will look at the transplant and say, not self. And then it will destroy the not self. Well, we have a question. The immune system is looking at somebody else's cells saying it's not your cells. So there must be some identity that makes your cells different than everybody else's cells. I say, what is it that the immune system sees that makes us all different? There are no two people in the entire world that are biologically the same. 8 billion people, 8 billion individuals.
Right.
I say, why am I different than you? Why? Because I can't exchange my cells with you, so that means we're different. It turns out, and this blew me away because I was not a spiritual person, but I was following the lead of the cells. And they said, okay. I said, what is different between two people? Well, it turns out on the surface of your cells, on the membrane, on the skin, there are proteins that stick off the surface. They're called receptors. I said, what's the receptor? A receiver. I said, you have receptors on your skin, eyes, ears, nose, taste, touch, okay? So we're like the cell, but the cell's receptors are not as complex. They're proteins. And there's a set of proteins that is called self-receptor. I go, why is that important? Because there's no two people in the whole world that have the same set of these receptors. They're antenna. A receptor is a receiver. The receptors are on the outside surface of the cell. My self-receptors are different than your self-receptors. I say, so what? Well, they're downloading an environmental signal. That's what receptors do. I go, well, then what are they downloading? Self-receptors. Me. They're downloading Bruce. And your self-receptors are downloading you. But guess what? Different receptors, different environmental signals. Each of us is receiving a unique environmental signal that self-receptors are picking up like antennas,
yes,
and playing through the body.
And it's us, yeah.
No two people have the same set. It's not the physical receptor, it's the signal the receptor is downloading. Remember, receptor plus protein equals behavior. Well, each of us is downloading a set of environmental signals that nobody else
right.
is downloading.
And that's so important about how that ripple affects into who we are and our self-esteem and our purpose and our being. And it goes...
The whole story is wrapped up in that.
Yeah.
And why is it so important? No two people are downloading the same field. Field in physics. Invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. Spirit, invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. Quantum physics recognizes that the broadcast you are receiving, a field, is also a spirit. Those two people are downloading the same spirit.
Yes.
So I say, okay, what does that mean? My identity is being picked up by the receptors. I say, where is my identity? It's the field, the energy. And I say, oh, get this image. I say, what? The body is a television set with antennas downloading a broadcast. If you see me in video, you're watching the Bruce Show on my body, my television,
right.
Okay? So then I go, so what? I go, this is the part that blew me away because I wasn't spiritual. And all of a sudden, I started to realize my identity is a broadcast. And it's coming in through these antennas and playing on my body TV. And then I say, you're watching a TV show and the television breaks. We say the television is dead. I go, yep, not working anymore. Question, the television broke. Did the broadcast disappear? I go, no, broadcast's not in the TV. It's playing into the TV. So I say, wait a minute. My body dies. My identity, the spirit, is the field. It's still there. I say, wait a minute. My identity is the unique signal. And I saw all of a sudden it says, then I cannot die. I'm not even in my body.
Right.
I'm playing through my body. And then all of a sudden it hit me and said, wait a minute. The field, spirit, is still there, body gone. But what happens in the future if an embryo shows up with the same set of antennas, self-receptors? I'm back. Yeah, but guess what? I go, so what? Doesn't make a difference.
Different channels?
No, same channel. I'm downloading my own channel through the same set of antennas.
Right.
But my TV is different. Does it make a difference if it's male or female TV? I go, no. We are the broadcast. We are not the TV. Does it make a difference if it's a black, white, brown, yellow, red TV? I said, no. You are not the TV. You are the broadcast. Does it make a difference if you're an American TV or a German TV? I go, no, that's the TV. You are the broadcast. Take away the basis of the TV and recognize all broadcasts come from the same place.
Beautiful.
We all came from the same source. The TVs are divided based on sex, religion, nationality, and all that. That's division. Unity is what? You're not the TV. The unity is we're all the broadcast and energy field. We're all spirits playing through here.
Yes. And It was really interesting reading your book, speaking of broadcasting, reading your most recent book, Beyond Darwin, because having spoken with you in the past, you know, 20 years or so, I could so hear your voice so clearly reading the words in your book. A lecture I'd been to already with new information, if that makes any sense. And I know we're closing in on the time.
We don't have 12 more hours? Okay.
Maybe in the future. In true form to your character, I want to say that your book ends as a love note, and thank you for that.
Well, it's hope. There's a vision. We didn't get here by accident. If you understand the mechanism, then you can control the mechanism, and you can control the character of your life. I wasn't spiritual up until I understood the nature of those antennas. I said, how long did it take for me to become fully spiritual? A minute. Why? It was obvious. I'm downloading me. And that was that. But then it also said, well, then my broadcast in my mind is also being broadcast to the field around me. And since the energy fields shape matter, then the reality is my life is not an action. My life is a creation. And it's broadcasting from my thought. I'm manifesting my thought. Then I go, yeah, but what if other people control your thought? Then I say, well, then they control your life. And that is the history of civilization, where other people try to control who we are and change who we are. And we've all been programmed. I go, okay, what's that about? I go, a cell, which I showed in my research, where the environment changes the fate. A cell is a programmable chip. The programs are in the hard drive. That's called the nucleus. The membrane itself is identical in structure to a silicon computer chip, but it's based on carbon. And so I say, what? Every cell is programmable. I say, and the programmer? The mind. Yeah, but the mind's got programs. I say, why? And this important, the mind's a computer. I go, so what? I go, it's a computer. You cannot use a computer until you put programs in the computer. I say, well, when did the program in the human brain get downloaded? I say, 3 months before birth, the computer boots up. The screen is essentially lit up. But we have to put programs in. So for 7 years, the brain of a child is in a functional state called theta. Theta is characterized as imagination. That's how kids can live in the real world and the imaginary world, imaginary friends, imaginary games, imaginary tea party, pouring nothing in the cup, drinking nothing, and then exclaim that was the best tea you ever had. That's imagination. But theta, imagination, is also hypnosis. So I say, why is that important? You want to be a member of a family. You want to be a member of a community. There are rules. Mm-hmm. You have to know the rules to do it. I say, well, how do you know? Infants too young to read the book or go to a school. I go, nature made the first 7 years a state of hypnosis. You want to know the rules? Watch. Watch your mother. Watch your father, watch your community, download their behavior.
Right,
and
course.
Now you have downloaded the rules.
Right.
Now the only unfortunate part is if one of your teachers, your downloaders, is dysfunctional, then you download that dysfunction
right, too.
And
that's why I keep wanting to go one step further.
Yes. Know,
because the mind is a wave. But it's not the water. That spirit is the water. So as
no,
you said,
I think spirit is the wave, and the behavior that we imprint on the so-called material world is the water. So your life,
we need
your physical
hours to go with this one.
No, look, you're broadcasting an energy field. It's not physical. You can put wires on your head and read it.
Sure, of course.
Electroencephalograph. Okay. And there's a device that reads your brain function that doesn't touch you. It's the probe is outside your head, mm-hmm. and it picks up your thoughts. It's called magnetoencephalography. I said, what does it mean? Your thoughts are broadcast. You're broadcasting a field.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I go, yeah, but then put Einstein's quote, the field is the sole generating control of matter. So all of a sudden I said, then your thoughts are generating the material ripples
right,
of that
wave.
Thought.
Yeah.
The wave of the thought is manifesting the material expression. Okay.
Right. But there's the backdrop. There's that backdrop of the field.
Well, yeah, I don't own the whole field, okay? I own my personal field.
Yes.
So I can affect my personal life, but I cannot affect your life.
Right.
Yeah, that's your personal life. And so you have a field, and I could be next to you. Your field is influencing me to a degree. I can read it, but I can't control your field.
No. I'm not talking about control, but I'm talking about just as you did, we all are connected. That's why...
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why... Evolution is not based on separation, which is what we're experiencing.
Yes.
I separate you based on sex. I separate you based on race. I separate you based on religion. I separate you based on nationality. Guess what that means? The more separated we are, the less power we have in influencing the world.
Right.
If we all got together and shared the same belief, that's where the world becomes manifest. It's a collection of our shared beliefs. That is what makes a culture, a civilization.
Right.
And if a civilization changes a belief, the world changes. And we've been through civilizations that have been here and gone, and we create new civilizations.
Right, and it is about freedom and...
Yeah, but the point is, if I separate us into individuals, then we have no collective power.
Right.
Imagine you're a broadcaster, you have an energy field of power, like a receiver. How many watts of power am I broadcasting, okay? I go, each of us is broadcasting some energy, but if we become more collective and share the broadcast, the power of the collective energy shapes the material existence of our world.
Yes.
But if I separate you,
right.
you don't have that power. And we have been programmed to be separate, so we don't collectively rock the boat.
Right.
I said, well, who's got the power? Corporations. They own the media.
Yeah.
I said, why the media? The media is awareness. If I can control your awareness, I control your creativity and your power.
And that, just like you said, how long did it take me to understand spirituality? You said a minute. And
yes.
And that's the same thing, like when a collective whatever happens in the body and there's a spontaneous remission. It's also what can happen within us, and I'm talking about the collective, all of us, because right
yes.
now the world, you know, yeah, listen to news or whatever. We decided in the beginning of this interview we weren't going to do that. But being able to exist in this place now, we're in this dire straits, and yet, hey, tomorrow we could all flip it on and...
change it overnight.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a reason why we are killing the planet. So we are murdering nature. I go, why? The Native Americans said we live in a garden. They knew that. But they then made their life about gardening. They were gardeners to take care. We don't. We are using that garden. And I said, how much? And this is the point. How much resources is it required for today's civilization? And the number, and this is science, it requires the resources from 1.6 planets to support today's civilization. I go, okay, I know the one planet we're in. Where is the extra 0.6 planetary resources coming from? Oh.
It's in the field.
We're destroying the ecosystem to pillage. I'll use a bigger, more powerful word. I use it intentionally. We are raping Mother Nature.
Yeah.
Taking her energy and her resources taking it out to feed our hunger for more, okay? And the point is simple. Science says you're going beyond the ability of the planet to support you, that there's an end coming. Why? There's only so much pillaging before you have destroyed the ecosystem. I said, so what? We are the ecosystem. We came from the ecosystem.
Right. Recognize that.
If it doesn't exist, we can't exist.
Yeah, well, it's a hunger. And I think what the hunger ultimately is that hunger for the unity, for the consciousness of that love.
Well, that's our own personal interior hunger. The exterior hunger is the advertising between all the shows that say what you need.
Right.
You need more.
Right.
You need bigger. Supersize me. You need more. Okay? Oh, that car? That was 2 years ago. You don't have an old car. You need a new one.
Right.
And we are being sold products that in themselves destroy the environment.
Right.
And the more you need those products, the more we are undermining our own life source.
Right. Well, I can recommend one product right now.
Yes.
It's a book.
Yes.
It's called Beyond Darwin.
The secret is, your program of competition and struggle was false.
It's over, yeah.
It's over. And the future is harmony and love and gardening and taking care of the world. That is the future, and that is so not just doable, but that is so encouraging of life.
It's who we
planting
really are.
Planting a garden will give you life.
Yep.
Okay? Taking care of things, people, the world, enhances your own energy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden says, if we stop destroying the world, we might even fall in love again.
Yeah,
that's the destination, my
Beautiful.
Friend.
Beautiful. Well, Bruce, what a pleasure. Such a pleasure to chat with you. I just really love it.
It's been a while, and I'm so glad we're back.
Yeah.
I so appreciate your contribution because, very simple point, knowledge is power, and you are offering the public better knowledge, more harmonious ways of living, more happiness, more joy. So your job is elevating civilization, and that is evolution. And you are in charge, and I appreciate you giving me a chance to add to your empowerment of your audience, which, by the way, thank you, audience, because if you're listening to this program, you are part of the creatives of the future civilization. You are seeking answers outside of the box because the answers in the box are self-destructive at this time.
Right.
So thank you for being with us.
Yes, indeed.
Your contribution is important.
Yeah, and let me just say, enjoy in joy.
Yes, I love that idea. I live that every day of my life.
I can tell. Once again, Bruce, write another book so I can chat with you again. That's all I want to say.
Oh, please come back and chat anytime because we both have the great desire of seeing this world become the hope and light of true love.
Wonderful thanks to Bruce Lipton, author of the most recently published Beyond Darwin. Always a pleasure. For anything we do on Tributaries, you can find out more at tributariesradio.com, and our podcasts are where you hope to find them. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.